hey, how's the economy? The answer is it depends.
I'm all about making yourself a priority.
This is going to sound weird, but we're actually making it at a lower cost and our prices are going to be lower.
I'm Richard Gerhart.
And I'm Elizabeth Gerhart. You've just heard some great tidbits from our show. Stay tuned for the rest.
Want to patent your invention? The chance is near. You've given it heart. Now get it in gear. It's Passage to Profit with Richard and Elizabeth Gerhart.
I'm Richard Gerhart, founder of Gerhart Law, a firm specializing in patents, trademarks, and copyrights.
I'm Elizabeth Gerhart, not an attorney, but I work at Gerhart Law doing the marketing, and I have my own startups.
Welcome to Passage to Profit, everyone, the road to entrepreneurship, where we talk with startups, small businesses, and discuss the intellectual property that helps them flourish. We have a returning guest, Gene Marks. He's a CRM and small business expert, author, business owner, and a columnist for the New York Times and the Washington Post. So we're really looking forward to hearing from him.
And then we have Jamie Zazara. Cool stuff going on with Jamie. She's a life coach, but she has got these activities going on that I can hardly wait to try this summer. And I'm going to let her explain it. And then we have Peter Mann with Aranci, which is air purification technology. But Peter has the most amazing story about how he overcame some difficulties in his life to be a successful businessman. I can hardly wait to hear this whole story.
But before we get to our distinguished guests, it's time for IP in the news. And who are we talking about today?
Well, we're talking about Lord Apple.
Who is Lord Apple? Where did that come from?
Because they lord it over everybody.
Oh, okay.
No, actually.
Oh, I got it. Yeah.
It was a band called Apple Jazz Band back in 1984. And Charlie Bertini was the one who founded that. And he has a little dispute with Apple over the name Apple.
That's right. So he had a record label called Apple Jazz Fest. And everybody remembers how Apple Music and Apple Computer got into a big trademark fight because of, guess what? The word Apple, right? And so they got into a trademark fight. They settled it. And eventually, Apple Computer acquired all of Apple Records' assets. And so they filed some new trademarks. And it turned out that Mr. Bertini, who had the Jazz Fest mark for musicians and for recording labels, didn't really like the fact that Apple Music was starting to horn in on his tiny little record label. So he filed an opposition proceeding at the trademark office, which means that they contested the Apple Music marks, and he won. So I think it's a great story because it shows how even the small guy can take on the big guy, and if you have the right legal rights, you can win.
Well, the next business I start is not going to have the name Apple in it, even if it's an orchard.
I'm going to call it Banana Computer. Right? Anyway, I would like to hear from our distinguished guests about what they think about this. Gene, do you have any thoughts on this situation?
You really have to be careful about doing this stuff. You know, guys, it's really interesting that when I heard about this case in Philly, where I live, and I'm not going to name names, but when you drive to the stadiums in Philadelphia, there is a cleaner on Broad Street in Philadelphia that has like the exact logo of a Disney character on its sign. And actually, the cleaner is named after that Disney character. I am not kidding. And I remember it so well because even when I was a little kid going to Phillies games, I would drive by this cleaner and it's still there. And I always thought, like, man, it's amazing that Disney hasn't come after them. Maybe Disney's got better things to do with their time. But then I also think to myself, like, boy, that is a risky thing to do, you know what I mean? To run your business that is so blatantly based on a well-known character.
You're just waiting for trouble.
They may be hearing from Disney after this airs.
Who do you think, though, came first?
Oh, it's got to be Disney. And that's actually a really good question. I think the reason why is because it looks exactly like the cartoon character from a Disney movie that was named after the cartoon character. Are we getting closer here?
you don't want to get anybody in trouble.
Doesn't start with an M, does it?
Right. They dodged the bullet so far. Now, like, you know, somebody from Disney's listening to this podcast and be like, wait a second, we're going after that guy. So I think that Disney did come first. And I don't know. I mean, maybe, for all I know, maybe they got a waiver back in the day, or the person's grandfather who started the business was friends with Walt Disney. I don't know.
Could be.
But it's shockingly, when you drive by it, it's shockingly familiar.
Amazing story. Kenya, what do you think?
Well, it's funny because I've heard similar stories and I've seen similar things throughout my life where I'm like, that is totally something that they've swaggerjacked from somebody else, right?
Uh-huh.
And I just wonder, say, for example, someone uses the likeness of a particular character. How far would someone have to go to prove that in like a trademark court or a patent case?
Well, usually it starts out with a letter. Somebody writes a letter to the person who's using the intellectual property purportedly wrongly, and they list the reasons why they think they should stop. And they go back and forth, maybe one or two rounds, and then if it's serious enough, they file a lawsuit to try to stop it. And then from there, it just goes off the rails. Sometimes these get resolved at a very early stage without going to court. Sometimes you end up like what happened here, where they went all the way up to the Circuit Court of Appeals to get the case finally decided. Jamie, what are your thoughts?
I guess my question would be, so before someone would even do that, is there a way to search what's trademarked already? Is it logos or just the name itself?
That's right. You need to check and protect, right? So you want to first
very
check.
Good question.
Yeah. And you definitely want to check. And I guess the Apple people probably checked, and maybe they just thought that this person was not going to stand up or not going to worry about it. There was some difference in the names, Apple Jazz versus Apple. They may have thought it was different enough. So yeah, that's a really good question. You always got to search first and then use later. Check and protect. Peter.
I imagine Apple has an army of lawyers, so I imagine they anticipated this as a possibility. Just kind of curious from the large company standpoint how they, you know, view the smaller guy. It seems like a lot of these don't go to court like this. I assume most often these are settled.
And I guess the takeaway message is, you know, check and protect. So check for the availability of your trademark, and then if it's available, protect it. Right. So now it's time for our amazing guest, Gene Marks. And I think this is the third time he's been on the program, and it's always a pleasure. He is a wealth of knowledge for running and operating a small business. And he's a nationally recognized CRM and small business expert. And he's a keynote speaker, author, and columnist, and the founder of the Marks Group, a small business consulting firm. And so he's been at it for 30 years, and he has a lot of great insights into what it's like to run a small business. You should check out his website. He's even helped us on a few projects.
Well, I love the name of his latest best-selling book, In God We Trust, Everyone Else Pays Cash. Gene, we need to use that at Gear Harbaugh.
So, Gene, what have you been up to lately?
What have I been up to? Pretty much the same thing that I've been up to over the past 10 years or so. I've been doing a lot of writing and a lot of speaking. I was just in Vegas earlier this week. I got home yesterday speaking to the National Portable Storage Association. I've spoken to the Association of Walls and Ceiling Industry and Pool Supply Distributors and Die Casting Manufacturers. I talked about the economy and labor issues and some tech trends and regulations to be aware of. And everybody's running a business right now, and they're very nervous and uncertain about 2023. So we're all trying to figure that stuff out.
What's the sort of the general consensus, or what opinions are you getting about the state of the U.S. economy and where people think it's going?
I tell you what, where I'm coming out of this, which is that, for example, like California's GDP, gross domestic product, is the same as the entire UK, you know, like the fifth biggest economy in the world, you
wow.
know, and Florida's is the same size as all of Mexico, and Texas is the same size as all of Canada. North Carolina has the same size economy as Sweden, which is my favorite country because that's where ABBA is from. You ask, what does the U.S. economy look like? And, you know, we live in a really big country with 350 million people and 30 million small, mid-sized businesses, 7 million employer-owned businesses. It's hard to just say, hey, how's the economy? The answer is it depends. If you're in the technology industry, it's terrible right now for a bunch of different reasons. If you're in the construction industry, particularly commercial construction, it is not great right now. If you're manufacturing, and small business confidence is at very, very low levels right now. But services businesses right now are crushing it. Legal services, architectural services, other businesses like even retail and restaurants have been recovering pretty good. And when people ask me, like, how's the U.S. economy going? I'm like, well, depends on where you're located in the country, who your customers are. It's very tough to generalize that the answer to that question because there's so many conflicting signs. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, Gene, I just wanted to make an observation here. Not that I'm trying to show off my knowledge, but no, but I do research.
I
don't have any knowledge to show off, but I look at other people's knowledge, but I do research probably every year just for the marketing department at Gearhart Law, and I look at what are the top entrepreneurial states in the country? California, Texas, Florida, New York, New Jersey. So all the places that you named as having these huge economies also have the highest number of entrepreneurs.
Which makes complete sense because they're big economies. They have lots of businesses that support those economies. And you can argue, you know, without getting political, I mean, people will argue like, oh, California, New York, and Illinois, there's so much regulations and higher taxes. And that is true. And, you know, there are people migrating from those states into states like Texas and Florida, which are more business friendly. But putting all that aside, I mean, California is a beautiful state. New York's a beautiful state. Illinois, I mean, there are millions of small businesses among those three states. There's pros and cons for operating there, and many of them are doing quite well. So, like I said, it's tough to generalize.
So, Gene, I had a question for you. You know, should we be concerned, going back to the economy, with some countries dropping the use of U.S. currency? And, like, what does that actually mean for entrepreneurs going into what this new economy could look like?
I think there is absolutely no concern whatsoever. I mean, I think China and, you know, Russia wants to work with China to ignore the dollar. Nobody's rushing to China or Russia, you know? Nobody's opening
I'm
up.
I'm not.
To run. Yeah. We all know many Chinese and Russian people and great people in great countries, but we all know the fact about their political systems. A lot of American businesses dip their toes into China, actually more than that, depending on the company, and they're finding out that it was not a great move to make, and a lot of companies found the same thing out in Russia. And nobody's beaten down the door to get into those countries. Meanwhile, one of our biggest problems in this country is stopping the tidal wave of immigrants trying to come into the U.S. Why is that? We all know why. And the same goes from an economic standpoint and the dollar. There is nobody outside of China and Russia that would even think about risking, unless they're a speculator, would risk their dollars, their savings, their retirement, their financial background in a Chinese or Russian currency over the dollar. The dollar is the most secure and stable and safe currency in the world. And there are even other currencies like the pound and the euro and, you know, I mean, others that are even subordinate to the dollar, but still way more safer than moving to the yuan or the ruble or anything like that. So I don't think that any corporation, even a multinational corporation, even thinks for a minute that the dollar, at least in the foreseeable future, is going to be supplanted by some other currency.
That's a relief.
Yeah, I was going to say it's a relief. That's clickbait, right? For some journalists who want to get some eyeballs on their blog, right?
It's very true. It's actually funny that you say that, Richard. I mean, I'm a journalist and I write for a lot of different places every week. I see my colleagues and I see the environment that we're in. And, you know, American journalism is looking for views because that's how they get paid. And boy, if you can write an article saying, oh, the dollar is going away and the Chinese are going, you know, anything like that that can attract attention, if there's some bit of story behind it, I'm not saying you fabricate it out of thin air,
right,
somebody's going to write about it because it's going to attract eyeballs. And look, we're talking about it right now. So doesn't that prove the point, you know?
Yeah.
If I have a company where I'm doing ceilings and walls and construction is down and I'm seeing my profits go down, can I pivot that into a service business somehow? Or what do I do with that as a business person in this environment and in climate?
People are always looking for additional product lines to sell, and services always are a big component of that. Of course, services is something that should always be considered. I actually am seeing the opposite. I see a lot of companies cut product lines and cut services. I'm seeing that in a slower economy, unless there's some real established opportunity, people are looking hard at their data, and you know what they're discovering? That like 25% of our products are generating 90% of our revenues. I'm seeing some of my smarter clients saying, hey, you know, before we expand, why don't we cut out some of the fat, stop selling products that are low margins or not making us any money, and instead focus on the higher margin, higher profitable things that we do sell. And that includes, you know, that could include services, because that's where the money really is. And they look at a slower economy as a time to really get their house in order. So I'm seeing more of that than actually expanding into other things. But I mean, if you can provide services on top of the products that you sell, that's great. And that's definitely something that you should consider doing. The other thing I'm also seeing a lot of companies do this year is I'm seeing a lot of shrinkflation. You know, shrinkflation is where you sell a little less of something, but for the same price. So like if you go into a Walmart and you buy their paper towels, It used to be like 160, 100, 200 sheets per roll, and now it's like 168 sheets per roll.
I am just laughing, Gene, because we used to go to this restaurant, and Richard was like, the piece of salmon keeps getting smaller.
Yep.
I'm getting one less potato.
Hey, I only got one pickle for my sandwich. What's going on here?
It's not a joke. It's like even if you order like chicken wings from Domino's, you're getting like less chicken wings than you got before. You know, even like Doritos, their bags used to be 9.75 ounces. Now they're 9.25 ounces. You talk about services. And by the way, for the same price, you know, you go to hotels now and like, you know, there used to be like all these amenities. Now you have to like beg for a house cleaning to come and clean up your room and maybe all the little chocolates and the soaps and the perfumes. That's all gone. You've got these big containers in the shower that you have to pump out the block. And yet they're not reducing their prices. You know, they're just delivering just a little bit less. So I'm seeing a lot of my clients across all industries look at what they're doing and saying, you know, can we ship one less item in the box that goes out? Or when we install, can we guarantee these services but no longer those services? Or we used to offer free shipping across the country. Now we'll offer 100-mile radius, you know, that kind of thing. Little cutting corners, you know what I mean, here and there. It's called shrinkflation. You might think it's unethical or immoral, but, I mean, these biggest brands are doing it all over the place, and I'm seeing a lot of small and mid-sized businesses doing the same because that's what people do in a, you know, in an increasing cost environment and a slower economy.
I guess we could write patent applications with fewer pages, right? We could cut down the average from 30 pages to 25 pages.
Use less ink. Oh, yeah. Wait a minute.
I hear you. In your case, I mean, you know, you guys write patent applications. You can commit to a certain amount of hours, but anything over that may incur an additional hourly fee. And maybe that's not something that you did before that you're doing now, but it is a way to protect yourself a little bit in this kind of an economy. That's what some service providers are doing.
So somebody must have figured out people would prefer to pay the same price and get less than see the price go up and get the same amount. You know,
well, if it's Doritos, I'm going to notice. Yeah.
Maybe it's for the best, right? Maybe we should be eating a little less Doritos and one less potato.
They're helping us. That's really amazing. One question that I kind of wanted to ask, it's a little bit off the track here now, but do you think entrepreneurs should take the economy into consideration when they're trying to decide whether they should start a business? Or do you think they should just ignore that and move forward when they're ready to move forward?
It's funny that you bring that up. I was just talking about that with a colleague the other day. Like Warren Buffett and other super famous, super successful people like him have always said the economy and what government does should make no difference on your business. You know what I mean? If you're operating a business, you shouldn't care who's president or who's in Congress. If you're starting up a business, it shouldn't make a difference what the economy is. So, you know, just go and do what you're going to do. And number one, to some extent, they're right. I get that. But I got to tell you guys, like, maybe just because I'm not rich and famous like those guys. So whatever I say right now, who's ever listening, just do the opposite. But, you know, I just find that hard to believe. You know, I've been around enough businesses in the past 30 years. My clients who are generally family-owned, B2B, you know, privately owned companies with 10, 20, 200, 300 employees, they very much care who is president and who is in Congress because those people make rules and laws and legislation that, like, impact their business. You know, like, they have to pay attention because if they don't, they could really cost themselves, you know? I mean, right now, you know, the Department of Labor is changing worker classification rules and, you know, changing overtime rules. We have to be paying attention to that. And if you're starting up a business, we've been reading all the news about the banking system. I wrote in The Guardian that interest was going to be the number one problem for businesses. There's like less capital available for you to sustain and grow your business because, you know, the financing environment is bad. I do think the economy does make a difference when you're starting up a business. Does it make it all? I mean, probably not, but it certainly makes an impact. Of course, some of the greatest entrepreneurs in the world disagree with me. So you probably want to listen to them than me. I'm just telling you what I'm saying.
Well, that's great, Gene. And it's a very interesting comment. Gene Marks, CRM and small business expert. Back with more Passage to Profit right after this.
What are entrepreneurs' most valuable assets? Their passion and ideas. We can't protect your passion, but we can protect your ideas. Trust Gearhart Law to protect your ideas with premier patent, trademark, and copyright services. There's never been a better time to start your own business. Contact us at GearHartLaw.com. At Gearhart Law, we have years of experience protecting entrepreneurs' ideas and brands using patent, trademark, and copyright protection. So if you have a new consumer product, a new software application that you're planning to build or sell, or a brand or company name that you want to protect, contact the experts at Gearhart Law, www.gearhartlaw.com. Don't let the wrong protection strategy ruin your business. All of our attorneys are passionate about protection and are licensed and qualified to represent you before the United States Patent and Trademark Office. Don't start your project without calling us first. Contact Gearhart Law on the web at GearHartLaw.com. Together, we can change the world. This ad has been read by a non-attorney spokesperson.
Now back to Passage to Profit. Once again, Richard and Elizabeth Gearhart.
And our special guest, Gene Marks, who is just an incredible businessman who's been around the block a few times and is giving us some fantastic advice.
For 30 years, he's been around the block. Yeah.
Fantastic advice for 2023.
Stop it.
So, Kenya, take it away with the first question for Gene.
Yeah, so Gene, we're going into what this new economy is going to look like for new entrepreneurs or people, you know, starting a new idea for the first time. What are some tips and information that you can share that might help them strategize and just be well equipped for what may to come?
It's a great question. So a couple things. First of all, you know, we were talking in the last segment about financing. It is a very difficult financing year. However, if you're starting up a business this year, the one really good trend that's happening is that the government is really out there providing some money and some resources. For example, there's something called the State Small Business Credit Initiative. And I don't know, Kenji, if you've heard of this or not, but it's a $10 billion program that was authorized by Congress during COVID to help small businesses during COVID. And of course, the money is just coming out this year, but it's $10 billion. And what's happening is that it is being distributed to all the states based on a formula, their GDP and their population and all that kind of stuff. So like I live in Philadelphia. So in the Delaware Valley, which is Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Delaware, is getting like something like more than $500 million in funding from the federal government. This year and next year it's coming in. And the money is going to the states. And then the states turn around and they're distributing it to organizations in their state that support small and mid-sized businesses like community banks, independent banks, nonprofits that support businesses, and organizations that make equity investments in small businesses. So this is like this huge opportunity for a lot of businesses that are starting up because it's free money. It's like you can get grants for your startup, you can get equity investments from this money, or you can get lower interest or very competitive loans from some of these organizations.
We live in New Jersey. Elizabeth and I live in New Jersey, and they have the Economic Development Authority, and I'm pretty confident that that's the government arm that will be distributing New Jersey's share of this. And they have a mailing list. And every week I get an email from the NJEDA. And there's like six or seven different ways to get money from the New Jersey Economic Development Authority. I'm sure most other states have similar communication tools. Yeah. And if you're looking for this, I think it was a really good idea to sign up for the newsletters and you'll see what the states are offering you.
If I could just jump in on that one, because I literally just wrote about this, Richard. I write every week for the Philly Inquirer. And the New Jersey Economic Development Authority is taking some of that money. They have brought on a handful of marketing firms in New Jersey, and they are paying those marketing firms to provide services to New Jersey small businesses to launch their websites and to go online and to get their e-commerce abilities up and running. They're literally paying these marketing firms to provide these services for free to New Jersey small businesses. So you just mentioned an exact thing that money is being used for right now. It's like out there. And that's going on all across the country. So if you're listening to this wherever you are in the country, just Google State Small Business Credit Initiative and your state, and you'll find the webpage of your state government that's addressing this. And on there, it will tell you where the money is going to, some nonprofit here or some banking here or some whatever organization there, and then go to those organizations and say, like, hey, you know, I need some money. Now, the other thing is to make sure people are aware of this, particularly if they're starting up a business or growing a business. This is not a minority or a female ownership thing necessarily. There is specific money that is targeted for minority business owners and for female business owners. But also there's plenty of money that's targeted for existing businesses that don't fall in those categories that can still be eligible. And they're for all size businesses, not just startups, which brings me to my next topic. So like the president just held a big forum just last week with the Small Business Administration to tout funding that all these women's business centers are getting around the country. It is a great time to be a female entrepreneur.
Woohoo!
And it's a great time to be a minority entrepreneur. There's the Small Business Development Centers, there's SCORE, and then there's all this funding that is going out, not only from the federal government, but from cities and states to support female and minority entrepreneurs specifically. And I guess my point is, if you're starting up a business, and honestly, if you're female, if you're black or brown or whatever, I mean, sharpen your pencil or at least, you know, sharpen your computer screen, get on there and start doing some research. There's money available locally and from the federal government that you're qualified for and that will help you launch your business in 2023 in an environment where financing elsewhere is pretty tough.
Yeah, and I would point out, too, that this is not the way it used to be, right? It used to be to get government money, you needed to be profitable and up and running and going for 3 years. All of that's changed, right? Now, you can walk in the door at a very early stage of your company now, and the government wants to give it away, right? Because these agencies are kind of measured on how much they give away, right? So it's a great time to go looking.
You're absolutely right. They're mandated. And people say, well, where can we get loans? You know, the banking environment is shaky and traditional banks are turning away. The Small Business Administration has a 7A loan program, 7A, or their 504 loan program. You can borrow up to $5 million at competitive interest rates. You pay it back anywhere from 3 to 25 years. It's given out to a network of small business lenders, banks that get approved by the Small Business Administration. And they are pushed to get this money out there because it's guaranteed by the government. And they have mandates. The SBA has to report to the president of their activities. And they're measured by how many loans they've guaranteed that year, like the more the merrier. So these banks want to get the money out. And they're looking for businesses of all makes and sizes to get that money out there. So if you're running into any trouble, go to an SBA lender. You can find them on SBA.gov. And you'll find it much easier to get financing from those types of banks.
Wow, that's amazing. Because I remember in 2010, when Richard and I bought a building for the law firm, I cannot tell you all the hoops we had to jump through. And I was helping with the paperwork. And it was a complete nightmare. Now, we finally did get half of the loan guaranteed by the SBA. We were able to buy the building, but it took months and paperwork and paperwork and paperwork. So what I'm hearing from you is it may not be that way anymore, I hope.
Well,
you still have to, I guess you still have to do the paperwork, right?
Yeah, it's still the banks that you're dealing with. And I think they're guaranteed like 80 or 85% of the loan. So they still got a little bit of their skin in the game. So they are going to put you through some due diligence and there will be paperwork involved. So there is that. I want to warn you that it's not like you just call them up and you get financing the next day. There will be some hoops that you'll have to go through. But even so, the financing is there and it's available for businesses that otherwise may not be able to get it.
Well, I think the most painful thing I learned was if you're going to call your company an LLC, you have to have it LLC or L period, L period, L period, or a limited liability company, whichever one you choose. It has to be that exact name on every single document you ever generate. We had a period missing on when we had to redo the whole thing.
It was pretty tough. So, Jean, what about other things that early entrepreneurs need to keep in mind for 2023?
There are a few things. It's never been better or easier for a business to start a business and be a big size business. Or at least look like a big size business because of the technology that's available now. For sure, there are some tech platforms that I love and that we recommend. I mean, everything is QuickBooks. You guys use Zoho. Xero is another one. There are many really good tech options to do. And the sooner rather than later that you can sign on with a good platform and start building your database, building your accounting systems, building your customer relationships management systems, the better off you will be as you continue to grow. The same thing goes with setting yourself up virtually at first and then maybe having an office. But if you're virtual, there's a number of great hosted phone systems like Grasshopper and Virtual PBX, which allows you to have everything just, you know, online without having to build your own internal communication systems. And there's all the office collaboration systems that we know of, you know, the business apps and Microsoft Office 365. And a big consideration is that you want to choose a good technology platform, go all in on it, because it's a big data world. And if you're going to look for financing in the future or to grow your business, people are going to be looking very hard at your data. And you want to start doing that sooner rather than later.
Do you see remote working becoming more prevalent? Or do you think people are going to be returning more to centralized workplaces?
It's a hybrid world. On the one end of the spectrum, you have companies like mine. I have 10 employees, completely virtual. We've been since 2005. Very low turnover I have, but I really do run the world's most dysfunctional company.
Well, the consultant that we got from you to help us with Zoho was by far the best tech person I've ever worked with. She is amazing. I can't say enough good things about
her. I'm
really
glad to hear that, and that makes me feel good. But I can assure you that, like, we don't have an office. We used to have an office, and I shut them down. This is, like, 20 years ago, and, like, we don't – since then, you know, we see each other on Zoom. We bump into each other at clients, but we don't collaborate or share the way I think we can. We don't have a good company culture. I get jealous of companies that have a better culture because they're in one place together. And organizations recognize this, and they also recognize not only is it culture, but how important it is for younger employees to be around, you know, older employees that can
yes.
mentor them and help them learn and grow. So there's one side. Then there's the other side. I mean, I was speaking a couple months ago in Louisiana to like a credit union association, and there were two men in the room that were adamant about everybody's got to come in the office all the time and no work from home, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, all right, well, dude, you know, you're killing yourself because there's a lot of really good talent out there that's just not going to stand for that, because that's not the way the workplace is in 2023. So the answer is hybrid. Most of my clients have some type of a work from home, you know, arrangement, one day a week, 2 days a week. You know, it balances things out. They still want people to come in the office for cultural and collaboration reasons. But I'm just saying, it's like everything else. Life is all about moderation and balance. You know what I mean? My best clients have realized that they can do this in a moderated way where they can, you know, still offer a nice remote working environment, but also get people in the office, because that's important too.
Gene Marks, CRM and small business expert.
Back with more Passage to Profit right after this.
Hi, I'm Lisa Askles, the Inventress, founder, CEO, and president of Inventing A to Z. I've been inventing products for over 38 years. Hundreds of products later and dozens of patents. I help people develop products and put them on the market from concept to fruition. I bring them to some of the top shopping networks in the world. QVC, HSN, Evine Live, and retail stores. Have you ever said to yourself, someone should invent that thing? Well, I say, why not make it you? If you want to know how to develop a product from concept to fruition the right way, contact me, Lisa Askles, the Inventress. Go to inventingatoz.com, inventingatoz.com. Email me, lisa@inventingatoz.com. Treat yourself to a day chock full of networking, education, music, shopping, and fun. Go to my website, inventingatoz.com.
Passage to Profit continues with Richard and Elizabeth Gearhart.
Special guest Gene Marks. He's just been absolutely amazing in every respect. I love hearing him talk.
I love hearing him talk about how entrepreneurs can get money.
If you haven't had a chance to hear the whole program, make sure you go and find our podcast, Passage to Profit Show, and it's anywhere you get your podcast. So check it out, and you can listen to us over and over and over again. So it's time now for Power Move. Hey, Kenya.
Hello, hello.
And who is Power Moving today?
Right, so for Power Move today, we are going to be talking about Malcolm Allen. He is a entrepreneur and a social activist, and he came out with a new book that he just released with Forbes called STEMX, and it's all about diversity, equity, and inclusion at the speed of thought in the STEM industry. So he's making sure that there's information available about the importance of diverse contributors when it comes to STEM and all of those things. So I thought that was interesting.
STEM really needs diversity, because I think that when you're in the scientific fields like that, new ideas come from a lot of different minds working together that don't think the same way all the time.
Mm-hmm. Everybody's having different experiences, right? And it's good to bring that to the creator's table, especially when it comes to tech.
So all the science stuff.
And science stuff.
Yes. I agree. And there's definitely been a lack of that in the past. So I applaud his efforts. Elizabeth, it's time for Blue Streak Plus.
Yes.
So tell us what you're up to.
So for those of you who don't know, Blue Streak is a video directory of small businesses. It's gone through many iterations. Now it is short video, which I hadn't really been telling people. I'm having a website made for it because although there's a lot of short video out there, it's not organized in any way, shape, or form. If you have watched YouTube Shorts, it's like you can jump from political to how to make biscuits. And, you know, it's
so just, what's the difference between short video and non-short video?
Well, short video people will actually watch.
It's short enough to hold their attention.
And so this is the first directory that is not based on the open source software that all the other ones are based on, which is location-based. This is the first one that is strictly service-based. So my tagline is, it's not where you are, it's who you are.
Oh, that's powerful.
Yes, and who you are comes through in your 30-second video.
Sounds good.
So that's number one. My second endeavor is a podcast with Danielle Woolley called the Jersey Podcats Podcast. And we talk about cats because I had a cat that had a problem. So the podcast was to try to get ideas from people on if they'd ever had a cat that had the same health problem. But the cat podcast is just a blast. And so I'll probably be doing that the rest of my life.
Great. So
now let's go on to our next presenter. Jamie Zazara has JZ Heals and Wind Therapy Retreats. And just so cool. Welcome, Jamie. Tell us all about it.
Thank you. So my name is Jamie Zazara, owner of JZ Heals, which I'm a coach, author, speaker, empowerment of mindset, and success coaching. First and foremost, I'm an educator of 22 years, so it's my passion to educate. Mindset is a huge part of what I do, allowing and assisting people to tap into the power that they have within, understanding themselves, finding what it is that's holding them back to step into the life that they want to live. So coaching can be done on a one-on-one basis, biweekly, or I also do an intensive healing where I help someone understand what it is that's really blocking them. A lot of people don't understand that where you're at in business and in life, it's a direct reflection of your thoughts and your inner conditioning. So I assist people in understanding what that is. So my empowerment events, in-person events, meditation is a huge part of my own healing. Sound healing specifically, which is crystal chakra bowls, which is sound healing. It basically shifts energy within your body. And so I host full moon events in person, and then I will be hosting it on the beach shortly, starting next month at the Jersey Shore.
Yeah. I want to go. Yay!
Oh, it's the most magical thing. So you tap into the energy of the moon, but we focus, really the core of it is focusing on what are we releasing? What are we letting go of that no longer serves us? So is it our thoughts? Is it the stories we tell ourselves as to why we can't have the life that we want, the business we want, the relationship we want, the health that we desire? And we set clear intentions. And then the meditation, of course, is so relaxing. My book is called Freedom and Forgiveness, which is based upon my personal story through divorce and choosing forgiveness and letting go. A lot of people don't realize the impact of holding on to anger, resentment, fear, shame, guilt, all those low vibrational feelings and how they affect you, the mind-body connection. I also created a journal called Let It Go, Let It Flow, which is a 21-day guided journal. I actually have a book launching May 17th, where it is Spiritual Awakenings, Volume 1, where again, it's a collaboration of authors that are sharing their awakening, let's so to say, on their personal development path. Okay, so Wind Therapy Wellness Retreats. So that website is Wind Therapy Retreats. So in the Jersey Shore, over this summer, we'll be starting in June. It is a either sunrise, sunset. We do 3, 4, 5 hour sails, which include seated yoga, guided meditation, mindfulness, and I also play the singing bowls on a sailboat. It fits up to 6 people, so it's a nice intimate setting. And It's just amazing. I'm all about making yourself a priority. Self-care is so important to just keep yourself aligned, because if you don't take care of yourself, you're not able to be productive or produce in what you want in your business or anything like that. So I also host some vendor events at the Jersey Shore in Toms River. So they're sip and shop events at a local distillery for local entrepreneurs that have product base. And we have it monthly. I'll be doing that also over the summer as well.
It sounds like you've got a lot of things going on.
Fun things. Though.
And a lot of fun things, too. Sailing and yoga, all great stuff. Sometimes people are calm. Sometimes they're in the middle of a storm, an emotional storm. It seems like some of the techniques that you mentioned work really well when things are going well. But, you know, how do you make sure that they work well when things aren't going well?
So for me, it's teaching people to just become self-aware. Life happens. So even if you've worked through or healed through certain things as to why you may react in a situation, it's just understanding. This is why breath is so important. Taking a deep breath in any time of your day, just stopping, take a deep breath, it resets yourself. So instead of when you're thrown curveballs, instead of reacting, taking a pause and just thinking the right way you want to proceed. It's a normal thing. You're not ever going to be fully not reactive, I suppose to say. But when you focus on the person you want to be daily, it's a choice. Mindset is a choice. Two people can experience the same situation and one person will thrive and the other won't. And it's based upon how you perceive. So I always say, whatever is happening in your life, if you switch it to it's happening for you, not to you, we don't see the big picture right away in things that happen to us. But typically, it's for you.
Just curious to see what you think just about creation overall, in terms of like how our bodies are created and like how things work at a cellular level with us. Like, we're pretty intricate creatures. And I think God was pretty smart when he put us together. So I'm just curious to see, like, where do you think these healing powers come from that allow for things like this to take place?
People don't realize that whatever frequency you're operating at, you're attracting directly to you. So people that worry, I don't worry. So what if you took the thoughts that you're worried about happening and you focus on what you did want to happen? So it's like Murphy's Law, right? What you think about, this is one of my favorite quotes, what you think about, you bring about, regardless if you want it or not. So in relation to health, if you're constantly worried that something is going to go wrong, most times it does. There is a huge and so much research on it, the mind-body connection. So a lot of what I teach about is the mind-body skills. So you can really heal yourself within just from your thoughts. People don't realize the power of your thoughts, and everybody has it. Even just with business and attracting what it is that you want, you can attract things to you.
Wow, that's great. Gene, do you have a comment or question?
My biggest question is just balancing work life with family life. I've struggled with that my entire life, and I was wondering if, you know, if you got advice for doing something like that.
Yeah, so balance is something that it's a daily practice, right? We all have the same amount of time in a day, and we have to choose and block out specific times that are non-negotiables. So first of all, I always tell people, where are you giving your time and energy away that doesn't deserve it? So think about any people, even people in our lives that we love, and I call them energy vampires. They suck the energy out of you. Honestly, I don't engage in that anymore, because I'm protecting my own energy and how I want to show up every day. So balance, for me, it's exercise. So I make exercise a priority. My kids, my family are a priority. And then you have, obviously, when you're running a business, something is always going to be off balance, right? Because we're not superhuman. So you can't achieve everything at once. But your own self-care should be in there. Because if it's not, all the other areas are affected by that.
Yeah, I mean, it makes perfect sense. And, you know, like you said, you have to make choices about where you invest your energy and your time. What about getting a good night's rest? Do you have any recommendations for that? Because actually, lately, I have not been sleeping well.
I know.
And so, like, this, I got up at 4 this morning, and I went to bed at midnight. And so do you have any tips for helping me get a better night's rest?
I'm all about meditation. I highly recommend it. So this is something else that also really helps. You have so much going on all the time. Your mind is always going, and some people have problems meditating. So I recommend a guided meditation because it focuses your mind and just it calms your mind. typically why you can't sleep? Are you replaying? Are you overthinking? Do you need to journal something out and let it go? It's practicing of just calming yourself. Could be related to even eating. How late are you having caffeine?
Last night I went to bed late because I was at a business function and I had coffee because it was a long drive home. So I didn't go to sleep right away. But I've been getting up earlier in the morning, not so much having trouble falling asleep or staying asleep, but just getting up early. And it's like, okay, now what do I do? Well, I might as well go hit the computer and I start doing emails. And then about an hour later, I start to get exhausted because I woke up early, right? And then, you know, I try to power through that and then eventually, I kind of get back into my normal swing. But it's irritating to not be able to get a full night's rest.
It is.
Most people, they wake up or their phone is attached to them anyway. I'm guilty of that. I use it as my alarm. But we wake up and we right away go to checking our emails. And your mind gets right into that to-do list. And you don't give yourself a chance to just wake up. You know, have a little morning ritual of maybe having coffee, reading, not jumping right into the to-do.
That's a good point. My rule for myself is that I don't talk to anybody, including my husband, until I at least have like 2 or 3 minutes to my own solitude to like pray and talk to God quickly. Because I feel like I used to try to run to the train and commute. And then I'd come in interaction with 5 people before I sat down to take that time. And like, you don't know where they are. Right. And they're passing off whatever they have going on. So if they're all chaotic and you sit down and you're just like, it just puts me in a better frame of mind if I just have that moment and then deal with people.
Okay, Gene, what time do you get up?
I get up at 5 a.m. every day. Mm-hmm. So it's a busy day. But you know what I do? If my body tells me I'm tired in the middle of the day, I mean, sometimes I'll take a 20-minute cat nap, you know?
Thank you very much. Me too.
Taking a little short nap during the day really works for me. It's brutal when the alarm goes off and you're in a deep sleep and you're like, oh my God. But then a few minutes later, I really do feel a lot better and energized. So, but you know what? It depends on the person, right? Yeah. Different things for different people. That works for me.
And that is an advantage of remote working, right? It's easier to pull that off than, you know, snoring at your desk in the middle of an office building, right?
Right. I wonder if with Jamie's techniques, though, if you practiced her techniques every day, if you could get to the point where you could sleep. Do you find that with people, Jamie?
Yeah. I mean, everybody is different, but typically it's related to just having a lot going on. In the times of my life when I couldn't sleep, I was overwhelmed and I couldn't relax myself. So, you know, doing the things that keep you in alignment with what you need to do. I think also people don't take the time, like you just said, to have fun. You should be connecting with your partner, having fun, going out, laughing. Because you're not your best self when you're not doing those things.
It's right. Almost like you have to remember to do mm-hmm. it when you're an adult, because if you're focused on getting so many things done, you forget. Yeah, have some fun. Go out to dinner or go for a nice walk or something, right?
Mm-hmm. I have no problem with that. Reminding myself to have fun. You want to have fun? Call me. I will find some fun.
Well, this has been great. Jamie Zazara with JZ Heals and Wind Therapy Retreats. 2 websites, jzheals.com, JZ Heals. She's got a lot of stuff going on with that. Really great stuff. And then windtherapyretreats.com. So that's really great. We are now going to move right in to talking to Peter Mann with Orensi. And boy, Peter has just got the most fantastic story. And Orensi is a water filtration company, but I want to hear the whole thing. So welcome, Peter.
Sure. Orensi is an electric motor technology company. I started the business in 2009 with a focus on improving indoor air quality. And my kind of what led me to that was my infant son who struggled with asthma. It was pretty, horrific trying to help him through his days and was looking to provide a solution for him and others like him. Prior to that, I co-founded an e-commerce business and we grew that from 0 to $14 million. And I sold that and then used the funds to start Orensi. And what we do is design, manufacture, market and sell direct to the consumer HEPA air purifiers. And COVID really changed things. You know, obviously the market exploded for improving indoor air. The awareness really grew, and that, you know, was kind of unexpected, but we were just lucky to be in the right place at the right time. And then in 2021, we merged with an electric motor company in Radford, Virginia, near Virginia Tech. That's how I ended up moving to Virginia. And so I have a business partner who has three decades of experience in electric motors, and we have a proprietary technology that we're in the process of patenting. You know, mid to late this year, we're in the process of reshoring our manufacturing to begin to make everything in Virginia.
Nice. So if people go to your website, which is oransi.com, oransi.com, can they buy one of these filter machines?
Okay. Yeah, we primarily sell direct to the consumer. In COVID, this whole B2B market emerged because schools were buying for the most part, as well as businesses looking to protect their workers. In fact, one of our first B2B customers in COVID was the Javits Center when they set up their field hospital. They used our equipment. Yeah, and so that was pretty cool. And then PBS had a documentary on Dr. Fauci that came out a week or so ago, and they show him at NIH giving a TV interview with our product in the background.
Oh, and so, product placement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was just luck.
So if I want to buy one, how much do they cost?
Our prices are around $250 to $379. You know, with our new products that we're reshoring, we're actually, this is going to sound weird, but we're actually taking cost out. We're making it at a lower cost, and our prices are going to be lower for product that's, you know, made in Virginia.
I've heard that other places too, that when manufacturers bring things back to the States from overseas, the price goes down. Why?
If you buy raw materials or components, the prices are pretty similar whether you buy them in the U.S. or China. And for us, you know, the variable is labor. And so there's two ways to do it. You can either use automation or you can just design the products to take labor out. And for us, that's what we've done. If you can design it with half the parts or the assembly process is simpler, it's a lot more work. But it's the only way that we could really, you know, manufacture the products here and do so, you know, cost effectively.
But you still have to hire workers, right? Local workers?
Absolutely. Yeah. They don't assemble themselves.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, but what's interesting is if you take apart a product from China, typically it has a ton of parts and screws. And that's because it's lower upfront costs for them, you know, from the tooling and the development, the part creation. And they're okay having 50 people on an assembly line, whereas, you know, it just doesn't scale in the U.S. And so we have to be really smart about how we design the product to have as few parts as possible to make the assembly as simple as possible and not incur extra costs.
So, Peter, I sometimes have wondered about air filters. Do they really work?
I'm curious to know how it works, too. Like, what's the difference?
The concept is pretty simple. It's, you know, to properly clean the air, you just have to move enough air through high quality filters for the size of your room. And typically, you can think of what's in the air in two different categories. One is particles. And that could be like dust, pollen, bacteria, viruses, things like that. And a true HEPA filter will capture those if the filter's of sufficient quality. And then where it gets really tricky is gases and odors. And so that could be like cooking odors or formaldehyde or emissions from a gas stove. And those you need activated carbon and, you know, in some cases, some other materials. That's a lot trickier to do, but most people buy air purifiers for allergies, for viruses, for, you know, wildfire smoke particles and things like that. There is an industry standard, but the, you know, crazy thing is, you know, a lot of brands don't share their results. And so as a consumer, it's really hard to know. And so I've been pushing for this. And, you know, it's good to see later this year, there are going to be some regulations put in place so consumers can get a better sense for what the performance is for products and be able to compare across products and know that what you're buying is going to work for your size space.
Yeah, and I think that's a great step forward. If we had a standard size 10 by 12 room, we had a filter in there and we were trying to clean just the particulate and not the gases, what particulate would a good filter capture? Would it reduce the number of particles by half, say, or?
Yeah, it should do a lot better than that. What happens is the large particles will just, you know, settled to the floor, and that's kind of, you know, you vacuum those, but it's the smaller ones that's stays suspended in the air that you really want to filter out. And a HEPA filter is rated at 99.97% of particles removed with each air pass, down to 0.3 microns, which is pretty small. And, you know, they can remove viruses at pretty close to that rate. And so, you know, having a HEPA filter, then you just need to have enough airflow through the filter to clean your air. And you can get the particle count down fairly close to zero, towards zero.
Well, considering we have three cats, I think it would be well worth it to have one of these.
We need one on each corner of the sofa, I think.
Yes. But we need to give Gene a chance to chime in here. Gene, where are you?
I am here. You know, I'm actually more interested in your business as well. Like, just, you know, how have you been finding this year economically? And, you know, are you finding employees okay, or are you struggling like everybody else?
Yeah, we're not having any problems finding employees. What's interesting in this part of Virginia, it's, I don't think it's well known, but it's an electric motor hub. There's several companies that have engineers that create electric motor technologies. And so there's this whole, it's kind of like a small Silicon Valley for electric motors in this area. Most of the other companies do government type work and they don't get any attention. We're doing a consumer product that, you know, people actually use in their homes. And we have a number of people looking to work here just to work for a you know, more of a consumer type brand. And so, you know, we've got a long list of people wanting to work here. And our plan is to hire about 100 folks over the next 2 years, just for the assembly and manufacturing operations.
That's great. And what about materials? Like, do you source from the U.S. or is most of your stuff coming from overseas?
You know, we make the motors ourselves, and we're trying to do as much local sourcing as possible. And so the plastic housing we get from North Carolina, the circuit boards from, you know, the Charlotte area, closer to 90% is local U.S. based. The problem is you can't get 100% of electrical components in the U.S. So we are having to source, you know, some components from other countries. It's just the supply chain isn't there to get to 100%. But yeah, we're pretty close to it.
Have you found the supply chain issues getting better over the past few months? I know it was, I'm sure it was really a problem before.
I've gotten that question a lot. I've never really experienced supply chain issues. For us, the issue has been more of like the shipping rates just going, you know, for a container. What used to cost $3,000 or $4,000 was north of $22,000 during COVID. And so that was a bit painful. But getting access to parts and components is, you know, chips has been a problem, I would say, and that's a global issue. But outside of chips, sourcing components hasn't really been a problem.
I find this wonderful. Like, this is really good news. Peter Mann with RNC. Again, you can find this at RNC.com. Listeners, we will be right back after this message with more of Passage to Profit. Stay tuned. If you missed any of this, the podcast comes out tomorrow. It's Passage to Profit. But we will be back right after this.
There's never been a better time to start your own business. The opportunities are infinite and only limited by your imagination and enthusiasm. At Gearhart Law, we believe the most successful companies all have one thing in common. They start with a solid foundation first. Gearhart Law has years of experience protecting entrepreneurs' ideas and brands using patent, trademark, and copyright protection. So if you have a new consumer product, a new software application that you're planning to build or sell, or a brand or company name that you want to protect, contact the experts at www.gearhartlaw.com. Our professionals will create a custom strategy designed to fit your needs and your budget. All of our attorneys are passionate about protection, licensed and qualified to represent you before the United States Patent and Trademark Office. Don't start your project without calling us first. Visit gearhartlaw.com. Together, we can change the world. Visit gearhartlaw.com. This ad has been read by a non-attorney spokesperson.
It's Passage to Profit.
Alicia Morrissey is our programming director at Passage to Profit, and she's also a fantastic jazz vocalist. You can scroll to the bottom of the PassageProfitShow.com website and check out her album.
Richard and Elizabeth Gearhart here. Kenny Gibson, our media maven, and also our special guest today, Gene Marks. And it's time for the question.
So our question for the week is, what helps you recharge? And I'm going to start with Jamie.
For me, it's exercise. I feel best when I'm exercising, dancing. Love to dance. I danced as a child, so I go to Zumba classes. I also take HIIT classes. And that just keeps myself balanced and me being my best self. I also like to go to watch the sunrise. It always resets me. I live close to the Seaside Heights, so I wake up, watch the sunrise, find my zen and my center, and it keeps me grounded and balanced.
Peter, man with a Ramsey, what helps you recharge?
Just getting out in nature and walking and listening to music, just getting the exercise and any kind of stress or anything that's built up inside. To me, it's just a healthy way to release it and be centered.
Gene Marks, marksgroup.net. What helps you recharge?
I would say for me, it's just drinking heavily and excessively.
You stole my answer.
Like all you guys as well. Exercise is huge for me. It really is. But I play squash like 3 or 4 times a week in Philly. And I do that sometimes first thing in the morning or in the middle of the day or at the end of the day. And it is unbelievable how whatever BS is on my mind at any moment because of work or whatever, when I go and I play and when I'm done an hour later, it's like history, you know? So that's what I do.
Kenya Gibson, media maven, what helps you recharge?
I'm similar to everyone. I think movement for sure and music are like perfect combinations for me. They always do the trick.
So do you make up your own routines to the music?
I do. I actually have a whole fitness format that I created around movement and music that works pretty well. The answer is yes.
So Richard Gearhart, owner of Gearhart Law, what helps you recharge?
Well, spending time with Elizabeth is certainly one of them.
I get you fired up already. You start talking about work.
I thought you were going to say a good old-fashioned patent filing. Yeah.
There's nothing like a good trademark search to get you in the right state of mind. You know, I like watching a good movie, exercise, and being out in nature. And we have some trees in the backyard, and it's nice just to go out there and sit, maybe with a glass of wine, and relax. So I find those things to be really relaxing.
I get up in the morning and I'm usually pretty sore and still tired and stuff. And so I drink tea and walk. I walk, I take a drink of tea, I walk. So I walk around the house. I need to get outside more because that definitely is very recharging. I agree with everybody on that. But I think the movement is what really recharges a person. And I had bought the Quest headsets to go into the metaverse and do workouts, and we haven't done them, but that is so much fun.
You didn't mention your cats.
I thought you were going to say your cats too.
Well, yes, the cats help me recharge too. Lately, Max, the little kitten, has been doing this thing where he chases me around the house trying to grab my heels with his paws.
Well, that's recharging. That'll recharge you.
He's so funny.
If you find pain, recharging.
And I'll be sitting on the sofa at night, and Lily will come up, and she'll look at me, and she won't meow. She just opens her mouth a little bit, like, come hither. And I have to get up and take care of her. So I guess that's a little recharging because it gets my butt off the sofa, right? And so we do need to go through everybody's websites one more time, right?
Absolutely.
If you missed any of this wonderful show, it's definitely worth listening to. You can find it anywhere you find your podcasts. It'll be out tomorrow. And our guest was Gene Marks. He's a CRM and small business expert, and he had some really super great advice for 2023 in small businesses. And then we had Jamie Zazara with JZ Heels and Wind Therapy Retreats, two websites, jzheals.com, JZ Heals. She's got a lot of stuff going on with that, really great stuff. And then windtherapyretreats.com. If you want to go do yoga on a boat, a sailboat at sunset, I mean, it just sounds so cool to me. So that's really great. And then Peter Mann with oransi.com, oransi.com. And they are making really high quality air filtering machines, making them in the United States, in Southwest Virginia. And their machines are really good if you have allergies or you just want cleaner air, if you have a lot of pets or whatever.
Yeah, I was just going to say, who can object to cleaner air, right? I mean, that's...
Somebody's
probably unhappy about that someplace. I get it. All right. So anyway, that's it for us. Before we go, I'd like to thank the Passage to Profit team, Noah Fleischman, our producer, Alicia Morrissey, our program director, and Mark Wilson, our syndication manager. Our podcast can be found tomorrow anywhere you find your podcast. Just look for the Passage to Profit show. And don't forget to like us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And remember, while the information on
on this program is believed to be correct, never take a legal step without checking with your legal professional first. Gearhart Law is here for your patent, trademark, and copyright needs. You can find us at gearhartlaw.com and contact us for a free consultation. Take care, everybody. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week.